Best-selling author and full-time recovery advocate Chris Kennedy Lawford joining us tonight on Recovery Coast to Coast. He's been on the show a number of times. Most recently, we had a chance to sit down with Chris at Tavern on the Green at the celebration honoring Adele Smithers, America's First Lady of Alcoholism Understanding and Awareness, a woman that has done so much for this field. Chris shared his own personal story of recovery back in 2005 with the book Symptoms of Withdrawal. Now, if you have not read that, I suggest that you do. It's a striking and poignant portrayal of addiction and the road to long-term recovery. Chris has been in recovery since February 17th, back in 1986. At the age of 30, he was simply sick and tired of being sick and tired, reached out to one of his cousins who was in recovery, and the journey began. Now, the latest book on recovery is a gem. It's called Moments of Clarity, Voices from the Front Lines of Addiction and Recovery. Chris told me about it when we were together in New York City, and I was pretty anxious for this to be published. 44 stories told by people in recovery. Now, most of them are well-known, told in their own voice, sharing a slice of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. The idea certainly is not new. PBS talk show host Dennis Holy profiled a number of prominent people in recovery in his book, Courage to Change, back in 1984. Gary Stromberg, a few years ago, published The Harder They Fall, again with prominent people, sharing their walk along the road to recovery, including Doc Ellis, Richard Pryor, Dr. John, and others. The power of these personal stories definitely saves lives, plain and simple. I've seen it over and over again in my 30 years in this field. And if you want what these people have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, recovery can be yours. We've had hundreds and hundreds of people in long-term recovery on our program, Recovery Coast to Coast, and they all have something in common, that moment of absolute clarity. And that's what Chris Lawford was able to capture in the personal stories of 44 amazing individuals, including some that you know, like Alec Baldwin, Ed Begley Jr., Richard Dreyfuss, Tom Arnold, Martin Sheen, Rudy Tomjanovich, Richard Lewis, Hollywood Henderson, and a lot more. But Chris also introduces us to some new friends, like Velvet Mangan, who has dedicated her life to helping women with children, Earl Hightower, who's been a beacon of recovery in L.A. for many, many years, Chris Meacham, an internet blogger, Marie Morning Glory, who started Miracle House, and Mike Early, the CEO of Care and Treatment Center, one of the leading treatment programs in America, headquartered in Pennsylvania. It's a wonderful book filled with rigorous honesty. Chris joins us by phone from New York City. Chris, welcome back to Recovery Coast to Coast.
Neil, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We let listeners know about a week or so ago that you were going to be on the show and asked them to submit some questions via email, so we will get right to it.
Fantastic.
First up, William in Roanoke, Virginia writes and says, how long did it take you to do all the interviews in this book, and were they all in-person interviews?
They were. It took about, I would say, a little over a year. That was probably the most difficult part of doing Moments of Clarity was actually, first of all, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, ask people to, you know, to talk about these things. I mean, it's, you never know if they're gonna, and it was, you know, some people said yes right away, a lot of people said no. Even with people that are really well known and really powerful, there's still a great, there's a lot of fear about being pigeonholed or the stigma of addiction, that people just don't want to go there. And then of course, just sort of finding the time. I wanted absolutely to interview everybody in person. There were a couple of folks that I met, you know, Chris Meacham you mentioned over the internet that I did on the phone because he was not anywhere that I could get to. So I did him over the phone, but everybody else I did in person. And I felt that was a really important component of this. These stories are very personal. They're very heartfelt, and they're very private. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to create that, atmosphere when I did the actual interviews.
Chris Lawford joining us tonight. Moments of Clarity is the new book. Shirley from Austin, Texas writes, as a person in long-term recovery, what did you learn from writing this book, and how has this book enhanced your recovery?
Well, the overwhelming sense that I had from doing the interviews for Moment of Clarity was the honor that I feel to be a part of this journey with these folks. I mean, and to also understand how brave people are that really do decide to confront their addiction. And their ongoing, you know, the ongoing underlying causes and conditions which create their alcoholism and their addiction. So that was a big part of it. And I also think that the diversity of these moments of clarity were extraordinary for me. they all had similar things in common, which were sort of this idea of surrender and also kind of hitting bottom, but they are all a little bit different, and that was interesting.
Chuck Taylor of Miami, Florida writes, were there sobriety requirements in terms of years for those you chose for the book?
That's a great question. I thought about, having a cutoff at like 5 years or so, some arbitrary number. And then I thought, why would I do that? Because I think everybody in the book, when I interviewed them had, relatively long-term sobriety, but it was not a requirement. I felt like a moment of clarity is a moment of clarity, and you can have it and then you can let it go. The interesting thing about a moment of clarity, or what Carl Jung called the psychic change moment, is that it's not something that you ask for. It's not something that you really prepare for. It's not something that you demand. It's something that just happens, and you have to accept it. And you can accept that moment, and then you can turn your back on that moment. I know my father, who died of alcoholism when he was 60 years old, I know he had a moment of clarity, because I talked to him around the time he had that moment of clarity. But he, like many others, chose not to follow through on it for whatever reason. He, I guess, didn't understand what he had. And that's the interesting thing about these moments, is they happen, and it's not like getting struck by a lightning bolt on the donkey to Damascus. It's really kind of an evolutionary thing. You have, like for me, I had that moment at those windows on February 17th, 1986, where I was going to put a gun on my mouth or I was going to surrender. I didn't understand that was a profound moment for me. I thought it was just like a lot of the other times that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. But I got to a level that I didn't really understand that day until months later, actually. And so often with these moments of clarity, like Kelly McGillis talks about in her story, she had overdosed, basically. They brought her back. She wanted help. She asked for help. She actually had a moment of clarity where she felt a voice deep inside of her go, not yet. And she spent 5.5 years trying to get out of the car that was taking her to treatment. Now, if she had gotten out, she would have turned her back on that moment of clarity, but fortunately, she didn't get out of that car.
The book is Moments of Clarity, Voices from the Front Lines of Addiction and Recovery, published by HarperCollins and available at Amazon.com and other online book publishers. It's a great book, and if you have people that you give gifts to in terms of their recovery anniversary, their AA birthday, this is a great one. Back to the questions. Lauren, Portland, Maine. Was it difficult getting 44 people, or were there some who didn't make it in this book but might be in a future book? Will there be more moments of clarity?
Well, that's, I would love that. I mean, I think that there, a lot of the folks in this book, in Moments of Clarity, are contemporaries of mine. I would love to do a book around the families. I would love to do a book with younger folks in it. I think there's, there's a wealth of experience and a wealth of opportunity here to do more books. We'll just have to see how well this book sells. I mean, as you know, as everybody out there knows, I mean, the future books are going to be generated by how well this book does. So if this book sells well and people resonate to it, there may be opportunities to do more books. I think that, there were some folks, there were more interviews. Some folks decided at the last minute to pull themselves out of the book, which was somewhat disheartening but understandable to me. And there was a lot of other people that I could have interviewed that I didn't. I had a list of over 150 people that ultimately, probably 130 of them could have been in this book. It would have been a long book, though.
Joan in Minneapolis writes in and she says, how did you deal with personal anonymity? Doesn't this violate the traditions of 12-step programs at the level of press, radio, and films? We deal with this on the show all the time, Chris. What's your response to this?
That's a great question. And I mean, first of all, I have to say that nobody in this book represents being a part of any 12-step group or any organization. So that's the first thing. The actual tradition in 12 steps, because I looked into this because I was very concerned that if there were any people that were in 12-step recovery, that their anonymity was protected. And basically the tradition is, the letter of the tradition is no last names and no frontal photography in identification with any 12-step organization. Now, the spirit of the tradition might be a little bit more than that, in the sense that, you might not want to talk about some of the buzzwords that go along with some of those organizations, some of those 12-step groups. I Again, I don't. So this book absolutely does not violate that tradition on any level, and I've been very, very clear with all of the media that I've spoken to that nobody in this book represents, nor does it say anywhere in the book, does it mention any 12-step group, except when I talk about anonymity in the beginning of the book in the introduction.
And it's interesting, Chris, you talk about 12-step meetings as being mutual support meetings. How did you come to that term to kind of embrace all of this?
Well, I got to tell you, Neil, that I talk about mutual support groups and recovery meetings. That is not any kind of code for 12 steps. Because obviously, if it was, then I would be violating the spirit of the tradition, if not the letter of the tradition. So those are just the way people talk about their mutual support groups. Those can be any number of things. They do not, again, I will say, nobody in this book identifies as being a member of any 12-step organization.
Dennis in Boise, Idaho wants to know, were there common denominators of recovery in those you interviewed?
I think everybody in this book understands that recovery from drug and alcohol or substance abuse is not just about getting rid of the substances, that there's a fundamental difference in the folks that they need to deal with after they put away the drugs and the alcohol. I think the common denominators in recovery are basically that, you know, that there is something, a lot of these folks for the first time in their lives found something bigger than themselves to believe in and to help them. I think that, and a lot of folks, obviously everybody in this book had some kind of moment of clarity.
Sherry in Albany, New York, were all 44 people in a 12-step program, or were there people who found a different path?
Again, I don't represent anybody in this book as being part of any 12-step organization, because even though that wouldn't be a violation of a 12-step tradition, a particular 12-step tradition, I found it very important not to associate anybody with any organization or any institution or any 12-step group.
Certainly, spirituality was a common denominator in all of this, was it not?
Absolutely. I think, and you know, but there's a guy in the book who was basically, when he came in, an atheist. He found his the power to help him in a group of people. In a group of recovering people that he associated with. So that was his kind of way. So, but I think that when you talk about spiritual, when you mean something that's sort of inexplicable and out of this world, absolutely there's elements of that in everybody's story.
I was very struck by Steve Earle's definition of spirituality in your book. He says spirituality is one person's individual one-on-one relationship with God. It doesn't have anything to do with anyone else. People can get spiritual in a group, but really it's just like dying. You can have your family all around, all your friends, but when you go, you're going by yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And Steve is such a brilliant guy, and he's so thoughtful, and he's so smart. I mean, you know, the thing about this book, I mean, that was great. And he talked about his spirituality versus religion, and he's absolutely right. And I think everybody in this has a very personal relationship with a God of their own understanding. And that's absolutely true. And you mentioned Earl Hightower. He's another one who has a profound knowledge and understanding of recovery and of the underlying causes and conditions of our humanity, really.
Chris Kennedy Lawford joining us tonight on Recovery Coast to Coast. Moments of Clarity is the name of the book. Tim in Washington, D.C. writes, how was the book arranged? It starts with Jim Vance, who I've been watching for years on our local news station, so it obviously wasn't alphabetically. Did it follow a theme?
No, it didn't. It actually just sort of materialized. A friend of mine said, you know, because I was so worried about who was going to be in the book and how it was going to be organized and all of that, that I, and he said, you know what, don't worry about it. Whoever's going to show up and whoever's supposed to be in the book will be in it, and whatever order they're going to be in, what they'll be in. And it just worked out perfectly. I worked with a wonderful woman who's not in recovery. Her name is Jan Werner, and she's a writer, and she helped me organize the essays. She helped me, you know, basically put the essays together from the interview tapes. She's a wonderful writer, and she helped me, and we had a great editor at HarperCollins named Marjorie Brayman, who helped with the organization of it. I love Jim Vance's story. I never met Jim Vance before. I was introduced to him by a mutual friend, and his story was so profound to me. And I think it worked out well. And then to have, you know, on the opposite side of that, to have this guy DJ Verrett, who spent 19 years in a federal prison, and had his moment of clarity in an isolation cell, when he was deprived of alcohol and drugs for 9 months in that prison, was just a profound way to bookend these amazing stories.
It is a great book. If you know someone in recovery who celebrates an annual birthday, I would certainly suggest getting a copy of this, Moments of Clarity, Voices from the Front Lines of Addiction and Recovery, published by HarperCollins, available at Amazon.com and other online book publishers. Jane in Chicago writes, Chris, did you ask all the people the same questions, and how long did each interview last?
I did. I asked everybody in Moments of Clarity the exact same questions. Sometimes we would get off, you know, obviously on tangents, but I had about, I'd say about 12 or 13 questions, and I asked them all the same questions, and each interview took about an hour, give or take. And some people like Steve Earle just went on forever because he has so much to say, and every bit of it was, yeah. I mean, I wished I could have put his whole talk into the book because it was so brilliant. And there were a lot of people like that, but they all lasted about an hour, give or take.
Some of the highlights from the book: TV anchorman Jim Vance talking about taking a shotgun to a park to commit suicide. Susan Schieffer, who was on our show a few weeks ago, had a marvelous quote: clarity without spirituality is a dangerous thing. Dr. Ron Smith referring to the windows of change and faith as a choice. And Judy Collins, who looked so good on the outside for so many years, but was certainly dying inside until she found her connection to recovery in the form of Dr. Stan Gitlow. In fact, Judy talks about driving a garbage truck while in recovery. She also talks about her son's suicide when she was sober for 13 years and how she made it through that tragic time. And I love Ed Begley's comment. He has a wonderful outlook. He says that today all his problems are quality problems.
Right, right.
Jennifer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, does the book deal at all with families who so frequently get overlooked in the process of treatment and recovery?
The book doesn't. I mean, it deals specifically with the individual's particular moment of clarity. And often that, you know, that has to do with family. I mean, Tom Arnold talks about, you know, driving up to his gate. He was living with Roseanne Barr at the time and her kids, and he was, you know, completely out of his mind, and he had driven up to the gate and he had forgotten the code to the gate, and that actually was his birthday, and he had forgotten it, and he rang the bell, and Roseanne came down, and he was convinced she was going to beat him up or yell at him or something, and she just opened the gate and she put her arms around him and said, you know, I just want you to come home. And the idea that his moment of clarity happened, that it was just this unconditional love, that somebody could see him at his worst and it would be okay. And I think, you know, so I think I would love to, if this book does well, you know, investigate some kind of a book about the families, because I agree this is a family disease. It needs to be addressed that way, obviously. And there's, you know, the genesis for Moments of Clarity was the fact that when I was running around the country for selling symptoms of withdrawal and talking for care and treatment centers, I saw, you know, the 90% of the 26 million Americans suffering from substance abuse, and then the, you know, the other 75 million that are directly impacted by that substance abuse. And I saw many of those folks, and I saw the need for some kind of hope in their eyes. And that was the reason this book happened. Obviously the families of folks that are dealing with this illness are also desperate for some kind of hope and some kind of, book that will give them that kind of, reassurance that there is a way out of this thing. And so maybe we'll do it down the road.
Chris Mel J. in Little Rock, Arkansas, writes and says, can you talk about your remembrances of Bob Timmons, who was in the book but died last year? He was instrumental in getting my brother into recovery in L.A. many years ago.
Bob was such an amazing guy. He was one of the first people I interviewed, and I, you know, because he was such a presence in the recovering community nationally, but obviously in Los Angeles where he lived, and I'd known of Bob for many, many years. I didn't know Bob very well at all, and he agreed right away to the interview and actually was one of the interviews that I used to actually sell the book to my publisher. And I remember, you know, I was so nervous that this book would be a celebrity book, and it's not what I wanted. I understood that I needed people in it that were well known, because that was the only way that a publisher would agree to publish this book. But I, you know, obviously, I this is not a book about, you know, the deep dark, you know, descent into drugs and alcohol. Obviously, people contextualize their moment, but this is really a book about that moment. As clearly as I could get the people to talk about it. And Bob's story, you know, about San Quentin and his transformation and his moment was so, I remember the editor, who was a new editor that had inherited this book, because the woman who bought it had left the publishing house. She called me up and she goes, you know, I love this book, and I thought it was because of, you know, Richard Dreyfuss or some of the other people that were well known. She goes, no, because of Bob Timmons. That story is so raw and so honest and so what Bob was, which was, you know, just a guy who was he was a pit bull of recovery and is going to be, you know, really missed.
It kind of reminded me, many years ago, I was the editor of Alcoholism and Addiction magazine and did a cover story on Billy Carter, who died about 3 months later, and know that doing the interview and then have someone pass away. But Bob's story is an absolute amazing story, and I can see why you used it to pitch the publisher. Was it difficult to get HarperCollins to say yes?
Actually, no. I mean, it was pretty amazing. I mean, I had another book deal with them after Symptoms of Withdrawal, so I had to bring them this book. I didn't know that they would buy it. I really, you know, didn't really know. I don't know the book business. That's really not what I've been. I've been an actor for 20 years. So I had no instinct whether they would buy it or not, and I was really kind of surprised when, you know, they bought it right away. I mean, they were really, and they're really, they are really behind it. They've worked really hard. I did Good Morning America this morning. I'm getting a lot of media on the book, which is a good thing for the book. And they're really pushing it hard. And they've done a really good job in trying to promote it. I hope it works.
Your background obviously is in films. Tell me about Richard Lewis and the film Drunks and your involvement in that.
Oh, that was an interesting episode. Peter Cohn, who actually sort of adapted Gary Lennon's play, which was an amazing play, and he came to me and asked me if I would help him develop it and try to raise money for it. I at the time was working on All My Children as an actor in New York, and I tried. I helped him a little bit and sort of forgot about it. We didn't raise any money, and then about 8 months later or something, he called me up and he goes, "Listen, I got the money to do this movie. I got Richard Lewis and I want you to play the bartender." And I thought that was really, really appropriate. And it was great. I worked with Richard, and then we sort of became friends, and we've stayed in touch. And he's such a wonderful story and so funny in this book. It was great. And then we actually went to Sundance, because it was in the Sundance Film Festival, Drunks, and it was a good experience.
Very, very dark film, but very poignant as well.
Yes, very, very, very.
Charmaine in Fargo, North Dakota, is there an audio version of your book? I would love to hear the voices that go with the stories.
I would too. I was not as systematic, and as I had to get people when I could get them, and I sometimes interviewed people in restaurants and sometimes on, you know, on park benches and sometimes in an office. And so the quality of the recordings is not so good. And I think that it would have been difficult to organize the actual voices of those people to do their own. You know, I think that would have been asking too much. So it never came up, and I don't think I'm the one to do the audio on it, so I don't think there will be an audio version.
Chris Kennedy Lawford. The book is Moments of Clarity, Voices from the Front Lines of Addiction and Recovery. You approached a lot of people on this project. Some said yes, some said no. Of those who said no, what were the main reasons?
Well, I think there was, you know, to be honest, I think there were two things. One was, I think there was just a fear of being pigeonholed as another, you know, an addict or another alcoholic or somebody who's, you know, sort of that public kind of, I'm a celebrity talking about my drug addiction and alcoholism. And I think that's, you know, that's legitimate and it's kind of unfortunate, but it's something that's sort of fostered by the media where, you know, especially in the entertainment media, this disease is treated as kind of a joke. And it's, you know, the way they publicize the people who are having a hard time makes anybody who really wants to talk about this as a serious issue, as a serious mental illness, as a serious medical issue, it's difficult to have that kind of gravitas. That's number one. The second reason people gave, which I think is very legitimate, is the fact that many people felt that revealing these kinds of stories is not what we should be doing. That these are stories that are meant from one person to another. They're not meant to be in a book. They're not meant to be disseminated broadly. They're, you know, one drunk talking to another drunk. And I can't argue with that. I really think that's where the power is for a lot of this. But I've been out there. And if you had talked to me before I did Symptoms of Withdrawal, I would have told you, I don't talk about this stuff publicly. I only talk about it in recovery groups and with people that I know that are in recovery. I don't talk about this publicly. Having been forced to go out in a public way because I sold my memoir, which was a memoir, not a recovery book. It just happened to have a lot of recovery in it because I'm, you know, that's a big part of my life. But having been out there now, and seeing the need for this as a public health issue, 26 million Americans suffering from some kind of substance abuse disorder, less than 10% getting any kind of treatment, billions of dollars lost in lost productivity, criminal costs, incarceration costs, domestic violence issues, I mean, you name it, national security issues. I mean, it's a huge problem that needs to be addressed. And I find myself in a position where I can do something to increase that dialogue. I also think that given where we're at politically now, we have a new administration. Healthcare is going to be a top priority. It's very important that we maintain, the recovering community maintain a presence at the table, that we build on the parity bill that was passed by Jim Ramstead and Patrick Kennedy, that we demand that mental illness and substance abuse disorders are not shortchanged when it comes to the revamping of our healthcare system.
You do a lot of work with Karen Treatment Centers as a public advocacy consultant. Talk a little bit about Karen and what they offer. They've been around forever. I remember when I first came into this field, it was called Chit Chat Farms.
Dick Karen basically just opened it. He was a recovering alcoholic who opened his home to anybody who needed, you know, he basically was doing 12-step calls and bringing people into his house and sobering them up. And then, you know, Karen has been around for a long, long time, and I got sober in the East, and I had always heard about this place down in Pennsylvania that had great, you know, great treatment, and they had a great codependency program or a family of origin issue program, which I actually went to. It's a 4 or 5 day program, which is an amazing program. They have great spirituality there. They have a priest there named Father Bill who gives a Sunday mass. It's extraordinary. And they help a lot of people, and they do it in a way. And, you know, the thing that really convinced me to go to work for Karen when I could have gone to work for anybody else, and actually I live on the West Coast, so, and they're on the East Coast, so I have to travel a lot to do the work I do for them, but is that they give away more charity care than any treatment center in the country. They give away over $9 million a year in charity care. Now, you know how expensive treatment can be, good treatment. And they offer reasonable treatment, but it's not cheap. And they're not for profit, and they have a huge overhead. They do they have psychiatrists. They do the whole deal. And it costs money, but they give, you know, they're able to supplement people so that not everybody has to, you know, pay full fare, and which is an important deal in this, especially in this economy.
What do you do for them, Chris?
I basically go around the country talking about addiction as a public health issue. I've done a lot of work in Washington for them. I'm not a lobbyist, but I do, you know, awareness basically, and I do speeches. I mean, that's pretty much what I do for them. They have, you know, Carol McDade down in Washington, who's been a real strong recovery person and done a lot of good work in terms of the Hill, in terms of making sure, you know, that we're well represented on the Hill. But I do mostly, you know, public awareness for them.
Chris Kennedy Lawford, Moments of Clarity is the name of the book, and with a nice introduction by Patrick Kennedy.
Yeah, that was great. It was really, Patrick is obviously my cousin and somebody who I care deeply about and has had his, you know, has his struggles and shown the courage. I mean, both him and Jim Ramstead, you know, both, you know, public servants who basically had their moment of clarity in front of the world. I mean, Jim was in a jail cell in Minneapolis where he, you know, was, you know, arrested. He was a state senator out there, but he was willing to let his, you know, his alcoholism be public. And Patrick had to basically confront his disease in front of the world's news media. So these are guys who have, and they've worked tirelessly their whole, public careers for mental health parity, which is a huge issue for us.
We've had Patrick on the show a number of times, and his story is obviously quite an incredible one, and it's certainly he has helped many people along the way, as has Chris Kennedy Lawford in the book Moments of Clarity. A lot of people in the book, Alec Baldwin originally turned you down and then changed his mind. Chris, why?
I asked him again. And, I told him it was important to me, and he has been a good friend for over 20 years. And I can't thank him enough for doing it. It's not something that he wanted to do, but he did it for me out of friendship. And I told him the last time I saw him, I said, if you ever decide to run for governor of New York, I'll go to Buffalo for 3 months for you.
You know, finally, Chris, I will tell you that the story that stayed with me the most really should have been the 45th story, because it was in the epilogue, and it was a story that Candy Finnegan, who's a nationally known interventionist, told about fear, flying, and being a friend of Bill's. Tell us about how that came to be.
Well, I had actually, the day I handed in the manuscript, I was on the set of a show called Intervention. People at Intervention had asked me to come and host a show on recovery where they brought back four or five of the folks from their episodes to talk about what it was like being in recovery. And I had never done anything like that before. I'd been an actor for 20 years, but I had never done a show with a live audience and you had to read from a monitor and you had to like get everything right. And I didn't know what I was doing and I was terrified. And I was standing backstage waiting to go out in front of this audience thinking, whose idea was this anyways? And how can I kill that guy? And Candy came up to me and told me about her moment of clarity on a plane and asking, the plane was being rocked by this tornado or something. She was there with her kids and she asked, called the stewardess, I need a friend of Bill's. So make an announcement that there's got to be a friend of Bill's on the plane. And this woman thought she was crazy and said, I'm busy, lady. We're having a major catastrophe. She said, you gotta do it, you gotta do it, I'm gonna drink if you don't do it. And so the woman did it, and then the plane calmed down, and a few minutes later the pilot's door opened, the pilot walked back and looked down at Candy and said, you wanted to see me? And Candy looked up and said, what are you talking about? She goes, and he said, you asked for a friend of Bill's, and I'm it. And Candy just laughed, and the pilot said, look, don't worry, you're in my hands. And he walked back, Candy's kid looked up at her and said, was that God, Mommy? And Candy said, no, but close enough.
That just absolutely sent goosebumps up my spine.
I know. And she said, then she looked at me, she goes, just remember, you're not alone. And walked away, and I got through it.
You have been on the circuit since 2005 in the recovery community, talking about your books, Symptoms of Withdrawal, and now the new book, Moments of Clarity. And you're very familiar with the stigma that we have faced for so many years. Have you seen changes from 2005 until where we are today? And what do you see for the future of this field?
I haven't seen that many changes, I got to tell you. I mean, I think eventually, incrementally, it will happen, but I don't. It's like ink in a glass of water. You know, eventually it'll turn, but it hasn't turned. And I think, you know, this is a difficult one. It's a difficult one because of the way the media, news media portrays us and portrays the illness, and that nobody really takes it seriously. And, you know, there is a thing of, like, this is a disease where there, you know, people do relapse, and people go, well, you see, you can't do anything about that. But on the positive side, we did get parity. There are people talking about this. People are staying sober. The brain research is phenomenal and promising. Treatment gets better every day. And, you know, the 12-step, you know, world is still, you know, thriving. So there's a lot to be optimistic about, and there's still a lot of work to do.
And, you know, I've always said the bright side of addiction is recovery. I did a telethon back in Santa Barbara back in the mid-70s with Dick Van Dyke and a number of others,
right,
an 18-hour telethon. And the theme that I used was the bright side of addiction is recovery. This is what your book is all about. The bright side of addiction is recovery. You are truly a great ambassador for recovery. The book is called Moments of Clarity, Voices from the Frontlines of Addiction and Recovery. It is published by HarperCollins and available at Amazon.com and other online book publishers. You can find out more about Chris, including his speaking schedule. He travels all around the country by visiting his website, www.ChristopherKennedyLawford.com. Chris, I wish you continued success with the book. It is a winner. I absolutely know it, and I'm encouraging everybody I can to go out and buy a copy. Buy two copies. Buy one for yourself. Buy one for a sponsor. Buy one for someone who's having a recovery birthday. I wish you continued success, and I thank you.
Neil, you are a bright light. You are an absolute bright light of recovery, too, and it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for what you do.